Hello, everyone. This is Cassie Burns, co-founder of All Your Data. I'm an attorney who's been using AI and machine learning for 10 years. I love data and love talking to people about data, and that's what this podcast is about. Each episode of Cassie and will feature a new guest. Each guest comes from a different background with a different approach and attitude towards technology. We'll talk about their experiences and hopefully we'll learn a thing or two. Thanks for joining. Let's get started with Cassie and Will Kreth. Will, thank you so much for joining us here today. Will Kreth. So Will is joining me the day after the 4th of July. So he is a real trooper here. So Will, thank you so much for joining this recording for Cassie and.
Thanks for having me.
And Will, you are CEO of a company that instantly caught my attention whenever I came across you on LinkedIn. I think I came across you and maybe reached out to you. You're CEO of HAND, which stands for Human and Digital. And I would love for you to explain it because I could try to explain it. It's a topic I get really excited about, but I want to make sure like the vision is coming direct from the source. So if you could explain that to the audience, it would be great.
Absolutely. So HAND, as a company, it's a journey I started just a couple of years ago. It's built on an international standardization standard for unique identification of talent. And, well, what do I mean by that? Think of it like, okay, the easy one is like it's a barcode, right? So barcodes are not very fun, but they do help in tracking, authentication, tagging and labeling of objects, right? Through packaged goods, barcodes are a very common thing. There's another element to that because it comes down to talking about what does that mean for other industries. In my industry is media, entertainment, sports, culture industries, fashion, others around communication of three things. Legal and natural people, they're connected digital replica because we hear so much about people getting scanned so that they might use a replica of themselves for advertising, entertainment. FKA Twigs wants her replica to answer social media posts.
Right.
and it's also a consent-based digital replica there. So as opposed to a deepfake, that replica is with the full consent of the individual, and they want to retain rights. They want to retain the chain of custody back to them as a legal and natural person, and they want to get compensated. So something called the four C's that our friends at the talent agency CAA talked about on our webinar we had last February, and that's consent, control, credit, and compensation for the usage of your name, image, and likeness, your NIL rights. NIL would mean nothing in a soccer score or a football score, but name, image, and likeness, NIL rights are a growing area of concern in both athletics, amateur athletics, NCAA, and also in Hollywood and in instances in fashion, other industries where people want to protect their likeness. And also, there's both an image likeness and there's a voice likeness story there. Voice actors are quite concerned with companies that can train large language models on voices and then not track or connect that information back to the person whose voice it actually was. So there's a world around those two things, legal and natural people, a unique identifier for that person, a identifier for their consent-based replica and all the versions they might have. In the game industry, we see a great example there of how the Xbox and PlayStation franchises have had athletes over decades scanned multiple times as they age and change teams and go through different life cycles and different airlines and features to have correct versions, authentic or high fidelity versions of how they actually look this year and this season. Right? We have a slide in our slide deck that has LeBron James and has multiple scans of him for the NBA 2K franchise. Hollywood's going to go through a similar thing with regards to multiple scans of A-list celebrities and even background actors too. The third part of the triad of our identification schema and the fancy $3 word ontology, the relationship of things to things, is fictional characters. For every Spider-Man and Batman, Barbie, on and on, They are interchangeably portrayed by different humans, by different legal and natural people on screen, or in animation, in different worlds. And so that's those three parts of the human, the connected consent-based replica, and the fictional characters, which we know and love from animation and from so many different worlds of literature.
So there are a lot of things I want to touch on. You mentioned in the concept of NIL, name, image, likeness, you tagged on an additional element there, voice there at the end. And for people who don't know, name and image likeness, that's grounded in rights regarding publicity. But Tennessee recently this year passed a law called, I believe, the Elvis Act. I don't really remember off the top of my head what all the letter, the acronym stands for. But what it does is it adds on voice to that right to publicity. And a lot of that came from the potential of deepfakes and wanting to protect artists out there. And I actually had a guest on my season from my first season, Jay Rodan, who is an actor, writer, producer. And this was right when the SAG strike was happening. And he raised the issue of voice actors, especially audiobooks. And I did not even realize of the potential impacts there, that it could completely wipe out one single type of career path for people or option. So I love that this is what's happening. And I'd like to hear a little bit more, like, functionally, how does this work? Is this a blockchain-based technology? Is that where the provenance is kicking in? Or how is that being tracked?
Well, that's a great question. So we often get the question about blockchain, and we, as a unique identifier, can work with any blockchain ledger. That's totally flexible. We're flexible that way. We can be a ground truth, a version of the story as to the thing itself. There's a saying that some of my friends in the industry, I was like, blockchain or no blockchain or hashed or certificate-based cryptographic metadata, the metadata has to come from somewhere, right? The source has to be a known source, and it doesn't just come out of nowhere, kind of like parthenogenically, from the blockchain. It has to come from somewhere. So we, as a registry, are a individual, one of 12, only 12, registration agencies in the world under an organization that is known as the Digital Object Identifier Foundation. They've been around since 97. They do 1.3 billion ID resolutions per month for the scientific research world. They also have an Emmy Award-winning example in the media industry, and that's the entertainment industry, which is a peer, like a sister-level company to us. I used to be the executive director of Full Disclosure. They're 501. We are 401. We are a lot similar to them in that we are both under the registration authority, given a license to create unique identifiers for objects. Our objects happen to be in the media supply chain, talent as an object. So it's about the metadata, a source of truth, a kind of a curation of that information. So one of the examples we give with folks is that, okay, so by what rule of thumb, by what metric are you saying someone is talent? Okay. And so we went through a lot of discussions with the industry and our partners and came up with a simple metric around how many databases are you in today? For instance, Tom Hanks is in like 200 plus databases around the world if you do a search online. And so that ability to quantify those critical metrics of someone saying, you're worthy to be in my database, Norwegian Film Library, Library of Congress, IMDb, Wikidata, multiple places, you're worthy of being in there, is a kind of a attestation of the authenticity of the individual. And it's something that says that individual is going to be around, right? A TikToker with 30 followers that just started their account a month ago, that's awesome. But they're still not quite on the notability scale. And they'll get there potentially, right? But that's the sense of saying we're identifying already existing notable individuals that are measurably, that's one of seven different indices we've filed IDR on, of saying, what is the kind of composite portrait of the elements of notability? And we're not the first to do it. Wikipedia's been doing it for 20 plus years, 20 more years, around articles. If Cassie Burns wrote an article for herself and put it on Wikipedia, But I'm Cassie Burns. It's like, where are the citations, please? Right?
Right.
And deletion mm-hmm. tells people, we're going to come and delete your article that you wrote about corporate executive X. And so that's where it comes down to multiple citations, what I call multi-vector attestation. Lots of people saying who you are, what you've done, and who said so. Let's roll that together. We've done that, right? We figured out a way to pull those three things together, the who you are, the what you've done, the who says so package into a unique identifier that's interoperable, that's resolvable, that has no expiration date, that will be around, hopefully, fingers crossed, forever, because its whole remit when they started in 97 was persistence. Let this identifier be something like DNS name resolution, IP addresses, but even more persistent than DNS because domains, websites go up and down, IP addresses are unresolved sometimes. Always about the quality of the reliable persistence and resolution. So we're getting a lot of traction in Hollywood with that because they like that idea. They like the idea of something that's standards-based. The sports leagues are interested in this as well, too. And that it's not going to lock them into any one vendor, any one solution. It's open. It's interoperable. The identifier is essentially free in perpetuity for resolution. We're looking at free to search. Search and match. Cool. Creating, updating, and modifying the record is where our business runs as a SaaS. We're business to business. We're not business to consumer. So it's very important to let your listeners know.
So I couldn't go to you, Will, and say, Will, I swear I'm notable. I have a podcast with nearly 40 episodes. I'm on, I've published articles. I couldn't just go to you and get that. It's really through other organizations that track, in essence, notable talent. Is that correct?
It is exactly right. So if you had a management representation agency company, that's one way potentially where we would work that through. Also, if Cassie was in, here's the databases I'm in. My IMDb, but it's typically where we're starting because we can't scale from a boil the ocean level of B2B to C. We're starting with B2B and working with existing data sets of highly notable individual and then kind of coming down. We've got the National Basketball Association players in there. We've got over 100,000 registered access to 3.4 million identifiers right now that we're slowly working our way through to put them into the standards namespace. ISO level, same thing, space, and then UI foundation. So, yes, Cassie, I guess the answer is maybe.
Life goals right there. I want to be notable someday.
I'm trying to become the velvet rope or the VIP backstage pass of this world, but we are trying to provide something of value, and it is resonating. It's landing very well with the teams and the residuals departments at the film studios because they have to manually match and sort data for just humans, let alone a digital replica of a human, right? So even just solving for identifying someone properly from lots of different sources and referencing the same page, the same story about who that person is with veracity, with trust, with reliability, that you know who your person is, because there's Will Smith the actor and there's Will Smith the writer producer. There's two Will Smiths in Major League Baseball. So just even disambiguation, just like which one Cassie Burns is it? Right? That's mm-hmm. a good thing. And providing a machine readable identifier to do so is a step in the right direction.
Well, you're talking about things that get me really excited. First you're talking about metadata. Two, you're talking about, in essence, data normalization. And also three, you hinted at data source, like the source of data, and it has to start somewhere. And sometimes that's machine created. So if you write a Word document, that the properties regarding that document is going to be populated based off of information programmatically pulled when you created that document, what title you gave it, what your name is, right? That's some pretty standard metadata. But some of these systems out there, sometimes metadata is a human typing that in. Mm-hmm. And sometimes humans, you don't know what I think makes sense to standardize what that style guide is like. So there can be inconsistent formatting. But I actually had a guest who talked about copyright music metadata and how that is because they're was not a good standard for that. There's just like, in essence, like a huge repository of undispersed royalties because the metadata isn't correct. And so those royalties that need to go out because of a mechanical copyright license, they're not, because they don't know exactly who the right person is. So I found that fascinating. And it sounds like you're way ahead of the ball here with thinking of potential use of licenses, royalties for actors in their NIL rights, and making sure that there is a source of truth that is really taking an effort to make sure it's accurate and it's normalized and it's set to certain standards. So in some ways, kind of coming in later makes you better prepared for some of the struggles that maybe copyright royalty management has had.
Yeah, absolutely. So just a little story, a personal story of, like, I worked for Showtime Networks in New York City for 3.5 years. And just even within one company, standardizing different teams and departments around metadata standards was a struggle. It was not easy, right? So from the green light of a deal memo saying this is a new series, a new theatrical acquisition, business affairs acquired a movie, or we launched a new series with a season with 13 episodes or 8 episodes or a limited term series. There was all the workaround to say from the start of a new project, to that green light and a deal memo, all the metadata that would be appended to, attached to that project through creative services and the team doing the univotography and all the captions and synopses and bios, all those things have to be basically curated. They have to be nurtured and managed along a media supply chain. And they have to also, hopefully, when they land with on your phone or your smart TV, to have the highest fidelity and look good and also be factual and accurate.
Oh my gosh. Movie metadata gets me so excited. And I think your business has been around for 1 year, 2 years. Is that right? And it seems to really have come at a time when there's a need for it because, again, of the strikes that we talked about and some of the agreements that flowed from that. Mm-hmm. We're going to see it's not just the big name blockbuster actors that will benefit from it, but it really, maybe more importantly, is going to be maybe behind the scene actors or scene actors, smaller, that they're playing smaller roles, but they agree to their likeness being used. There's a mechanism there for them to get, you know, royalties from that.
Absolutely. We're working on a project right now for the International Broadcasting Convention in September with a tracking element of a story of a kind of a proof of concept of the media supply chain for digital replica with an actor who is a SAG-AFTRA actor, and he's been a background actor or a bit player, has small roles, important roles, but small roles, and is highly notable, has been around, but he's not a lead. He's not a best supporting actor. He's a, like many actors, a vital part of the industry, in a character actor in multiple instances. And we're going to create a replica of him. And in addition to tracking his legal and natural person, that connected consent based digital replica, and map out all the different nodes and stations of from the start to finish of the supply chain around that. So trying to say, here's how it could work in practice, here's how we're going to work from a practical level, and just the systems and method by which you'll say, here's how we tracked the happened all the way through to distribution and playout and measurements and analytics, and what's the complete life cycle of that individual and the metadata around the consent based the title about their individual, about their. And so that's an interesting world moving to, because I keep saying this and people are like scratching heads, but they nod knowingly after a second. The talent is now becoming, or at least being recognized, as an object in the supply chain that needs to be protected and cared for and annotated and measured, right? And in a way that's kind of both automatable, but also respects those four C's of consent, control, and competency.
So there could be an instance where someone agrees to let a company use their likeness, but it's for a fixed period of time. And that's something that could be tracked in this mechanism. If they say it's a 5-year term, you can use it. And any time you use it, maybe I get certain royalties that flow back my way, or any time it's published out there, I get some sort of royalties. And at that 5-year mark, afterwards, if someone tried to use it, there would be like an alert to the artist, or what would be that? How would that manifest after a term of an agreement?
And that comes into rights management software. And Cassie, we've talked with companies that are in that rights management space who use house or internal identifiers, or they use like publicly available but still not managed IDs, or they're trying to piece it together in a very manual way. And having a way that people could be talking about the same person and with a same sense of confidence that this is indeed Ryan Gosling or Ryan Reynolds or whoever it is, right? And all of the kind of the elements of the, like, right, the authenticity, the vectors of attribution back to the source. That's super important, right? And to get that cooperation is not trivial. It's not, we didn't go down this path because it was easy, but because the long game speaks to the notion that standards win in the end. And we look to our friends at Eider, who won an Emmy Award last October, and say they went the standards route to tag and label content, film and TV titles in the industry. And they did it the right way, and they built it gradually, and but that sense of like, it was necessary to have an old phrase, lingua franca, but speaking the same language here, around what is the thing itself, and also the versions and derivative works and behind the scenes and the making of, the director's cut, so many different iterations in Hollywood for titles. But now we're looking at iterations of people and their relevance.
And I imagine, I know you're not an attorney, but we're starting to realize the value of ourselves as an asset and digital representations of ourselves as an asset. And I had a guest not very long ago who she's in digital asset management. And there's kind of a gap of awareness maybe in traditional trust and estate attorneys that this may be something that you need to talk to your clients about. Do you see some, have you had any trust and estate attorneys come to you and say, this is something I need to be aware of, or is that maybe not a priority in it right now, but something that you see is valuable for this broader
Absolutely.
Conversation?
Thank you for bringing that up. So I'll dig into that for just a second on some plausible scenarios there. One is when the estates of an individual is managing their rights in the present and the future, they want to have that confidence and assurance that the custody of the likeness of, if the estate says grandpa or grandma wants to, they want to monetize their voice likeness, right? They were great voice actors of the past. I fully anticipate, gets a little more of a speculative, you and I have talked about this before offline, a speculative thing of thinking about if the great voice actors of the past could have consent-based synthetic public speech or others that can create likenesses of those voices for new usages, then wouldn't they want to have confidence that the attribution, that the chain of custody, the compensation element of the 4Cs was documented for that instance? And what are the boundaries and what are the legal terms and conditions of the usage, right? The implementation should be well documented. If it's time-bounded, is it for a limited time? What are the controls and guardrails around that, right? As opposed to people scraping and training on data that they don't have the rights for, and maybe it may infringe and maybe violate copyright law. Or that, and you talked about publicity and the laws around that, saying that if there's not a conversation with the estate, then they open themselves up for legal action. But no one wants to get sued, right? But
right.
So that is an interesting thing around, we're going to see, I think, the estates having those interesting conversations with their legal counsel and also with the studios networks around what's viable, what's doable with regards to the appearance of that voice or likeness in the culture again in some utilization in a film or a podcast or an audio track or what have you.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating for multiple reasons in that that's a practice of law that I see is a little bit on the older side. It's not maybe one that's tech forward all the time. So I could see it potentially being a gap in knowledge. And maybe that's not the case. Maybe the attorneys handling trusts and estates for clients that would have these concerns would have sophisticated tech forward trust and estate attorneys. But I could foresee, again, you're talking, I know you're focusing on business to business right now, but there is the potential that it could, the need or the desire to track authenticity to a broader group of people. And having some control over me, Cassie, I want my family to maybe use or not use my likeness in some way, because I wouldn't be surprised if at some point, and this is me being speculative, people are selling their likenesses to businesses for business to business purposes to create hyper realistic avatars. So that might be a future, and that then would, I think, impact more regular people when they're estate planning. But I think there's just a lot of very novel ideas and frameworks and structures that need to be built out. And again, that's why whenever I heard about your company, I was like, oh, I have to talk to him, because I've been pulling on this thread, these issues around these novel issues, pretty much this whole season. And I just find it fascinating. So
share with your listeners the whole question around the one of the best examples that's talked about in the media is that James Earl Jones, the actor, has licensed his voice to Lucasfilm for future instantiations of Darth Vader, because he's the famous voice behind Darth. And ostensibly, long after he's gone, he's getting up in years, and I fully anticipate there's a world where his family will get a check in perpetuity, or for a long time, right? Because there's the copyright laws in this country around what's monetizable before it goes to public domain, before it becomes no longer a rights story. And to set those very forward thinking, to set up that example of voice likeness licensing with an eye toward it's going to live on after I'm gone, right? And that's it. While it's like of sound mind and body, I'm making a decision, someone says to themselves, to if the greats of the past had been in a world of today where they can make that conscious decision, say, hey, I don't know, Betty White, do you want to license something to your descendants?
Right.
So they could, and a question like, how do you frame that in a delicate, a sensitive, yet also a optimistic way around saying, hey, now we can have your voice live on, but would you like rather have them participate in the conscious decision or choose not to, right? To have them
right.
Say, once I'm off this earth, it's game over.
Right. It's just something new to think about. For among the many other things we have to think about.
In a world where we see fraudulent usages increasing, deepfakes exponentially growing, misrepresentation. There's like 100 bills in federal and state legislatures trying to stop misrepresentation and AI being used to create replicas that are on Cassie Uncanny Valley tests that are used to endorse dental plans or what have you. So, that it's an interesting time. How there's a saying that legislation is long and or litigation is long and legislation is late. These kind of issues when they come up in society.
Yeah, and I there are laws. I know that California is trying to pass a law about watermarking of generative AI content. And I think the challenging part is the litigation is long, legislation is maybe later. And this is an instance where the tech is moving so quickly with potential pretty significant impact to people in a way that they may not even really realize it. And I nearly feel like an authentication forward movement is really what we have to move towards, because I think the watermarking is just going to be so potentially easy for bad actors to get around that it's nearly where we have to move, where I'm not going to believe it's real until there's some sort of method of authentication that lets me know it's really you.
Yeah. To be fair with you, or to let you in on something, I guess, in a way. It's good. There's software solutions to these things, but sometimes it requires a combination of software and hardware, right? At the chipset level, there have to be safeguards and protocols and boundaries of protection, like a firewalls, essentially, to say, you know, illegal content can't pass through these processes, unless it has the seal of approval. So, you know, they're not validated, like source verification.
Verified credentials. It'll be interesting to see how we deal with that big issue. But we're get close to the end, Will. I can't believe it. It's flown by. I would love to hear a little bit, share a little bit more with the audience about some big projects. I know you all have had some beta projects with Sony, or if you want to talk about something you have coming up that you're really excited about, I'd love to kind of end on what all your hand is doing that to me is novel and really interesting.
So here in the summer of 2024, because I imagine your podcast will live on for quite some time, we are working with Sony Pictures Entertainment as a media partner of ours, and also in discussions with talent agencies and the actors unions and other folks like that around ways in which we can help provide open IDs or database access, API access, things like that. We are part of a digital accelerator or an innovation accelerator project for the IBC, International Broadcasting Convention, in September, where we're doing that tracking, end-to-end tracking of the digital replica story and all the behind-the-scenes coverage of, like, when someone gets scanned, how's that object of the binary file protected and tagged, annotated, and labeled with all that companion metadata it needs to have to be provide attribution on its journey. We are also looking at conversations with companies in the AI training data space around tagging, annotating, and labeling archival legacy content footage with unique identifiers, our talent identifier, because when you can run facial recognition software against footage and get the technical forensic metadata about who's in the footage, right? That's the conversation right now. OpenAI licensing great vaults of entertainment or news data. Sometimes they're in litigation with folks like New York Times. Sometimes they're just getting a licensing deal with News Corp or with multiple other companies around the world. And they're looking at the professionally curated, professionally created content from the media companies as future training data. The question that I think that comes in, this operative question, one of the biggest questions I have and my friends in the industry have is, will it be one-time payments or one-time payments and residual payments per usage, right? And the question comes down to, will the residual system of payments per usage, pay performance, Apple, in their television arm of Apple, recently announced they want to pay the talent less upfront and more based on performance. But all of that predicates transparency in the supply chain and also a way to track performance with a kind of holistic set of accuracy, a composite or a 360 view of how the talent did and all of the machine-readable, automatable metadata as a companion of that. So back to training data sets, identifying individuals, humans, famous likenesses of history in the vaults and the tape libraries. That object that is the human, that is the talent, is, I would contend, one of the most valuable things to identify, annotate, tag, and label as part of the, as mentioned, those three words, technical forensic metadata, about what do you have? If you're going to be training a language model on the great archives of the film and TV industry, then it would stand to reason you want to know, what are you buying? What's in there?
Right.
We want to help with a standard way of slapping a little book. Okay, it's, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or it's a person from 1975 who was the pop star of the time. Whatever it is, all those individuals who are notable could have a hand identifier to say, here's the payload of what we found in the archives as we investigated it, as we researched it, as we hoovered up everything we could find and the objects in the footage. And here's all the manifest of all that information.
That is so exciting. Oh my gosh. Ugh, I can't wait to, I'll definitely be staying in touch with you. I want to hear all that you all are doing. Thank you so much for joining me here today, Will. We could talk for so much longer, but here at the end, are there any closing comments or closing thoughts you'd like to share with the audience?
Oh, it's always great to talk to you. Glad to be on your program today. And hope we can do it again within the not too distant future, because they'll hopefully have lots more to talk about on a future show.
Absolutely. Well, I know I've learned so much from you today, Will, so thank you so much for joining. And I know the audience has learned as much as well. And to our audience, thank you so much for joining, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Cassie and...